Blog Talk Radio.
And you're in the G-Zone with Giovanni Gelati. Gio, what's going on today?
Thank you, Big Daddy Abel. Today we have Kevin Stubinsky with us. He is the author of Pearls Before Swine, a new series that will be starting tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. We have a doubleheader. Kim Vogel-Sawyer returns to the show at 10 o'clock, 10:30. Nita Higman, she's back on. She's with us at 10:30, so it's a doubleheader, 10 and 10:30. We do have a show on Wednesday. And for anybody who is Canadian that's a listener, you guys don't catch any of the shows later in the week, happy Canada Day. And for those of you who maybe taking it easy this week, I wish everybody a very nice 4th of July weekend. Let's bring Kevin in. Kevin, welcome to the show. How you doing?
Oh, fine. Thank you for having me on today.
Yeah, I want to thank you. Just right off the bat, anybody that reads your bio sees you served. I want to thank you for your service. And I guess 4th of July weekend's got to be a little something special.
Yeah, especially this one. I'll be actually going up to visit my brother who just had his second child 2 weeks ago. So I'll get to see my nephew for the first time. So
congratulations.
It should be interesting. Oh, thank you. I guess bigger congrats to him, but, you know.
Well, I mean, everybody's family, so, you know,
yep.
It's a nice thing.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about Pearls Before Swine. What precipitated it? Again, going back to your bio, you've written for the military for quite a while, so I have to say that this project's quite a departure for you.
Like I said, just doing mainly news stories and feature stories and stuff for the military newspaper. Also in college, I interned with a bunch of different newspapers. So, yeah, it was mainly just short stories that I was working with, you know, newspaper stuff. So, yeah, it was a big departure to actually start working on a novel. I think I just, what precipitated was, I guess I always just wanted to, write. I guess it's always innate in everybody. I think everybody always wants to be like, oh, I want to write a novel. I think it's on most people's bucket list. I think I really got serious about it, though, when I joined a writer's group, when I got out of the Army. Down when I was living in Georgia, outside Atlanta, I joined a writer's group there. And everyone there was just like, we all want to write a novel, we all want to write a novel. So I was like, okay, I'll do it too. And I think that was just the edge that pushed me toward it in terms of deciding to write a novel. Just the fact that everybody in my group was writing one. So.
Interesting. Now, when you were doing your writing for the military, is that strictly like a factual type thing where you're just reporting the facts, or were you able to inject some of your person into it?
Well, a little bit. You could inject some of your person into it in terms of like when you did feature writing. Most, you know, hard news stories, you can't really inject anything in because you're just reporting, you know, the 5 W's and the how. But feature writing, you do get to put your own little style into it, not necessarily your opinion stuff, but your own little writing style. You got to be a little bit more creative with the feature writing, which is what I kind of liked about feature writing. I know a lot of people, when we were going through advanced individual training for the military at Fort Meade, a lot of people didn't like the feature block section because they tended to be longer stories. But those are actually more of my favorite ones because you got to inject your personality. But for the most part, no, it was all just factual writing when you did your hard news or your sports stories, but I did get sometimes to be creative in my military writing.
Yeah, my eyebrows still arched for those of you who can't see me because we're on radio. What are the 5 W's? I know who, what, when, why. What are the 5 W's?
Who, what, when, where, why, and then your how.
Okay. Well, there's a Franciscan friar out there somewhere wanting to throw an eraser at me, hit me with a ruler because I forgot that. That's fine.
Yeah, it's okay. It's okay. We it's one of those things sometimes you know in the back of your mind, but you can't really recall off the top of your head. So.
Yeah, I totally obliterated it out of my mind. I don't know the stupidest things I can remember. The other stuff, forget it. It's just I never sentence structure, just not my thing. So, yeah. When you decided to write the work, what made you choose the title, and how'd you roll with this? What's it about?
Well, it's kind of I think of what I just got back from Iraq, and you know, everyone always thinks like, oh, you're a hero, you're a great hero, and you know, blah blah blah. But I mean, you'll hear from a lot of veterans. They'll just say, you know, oh, I was just doing my job. Well, around the time I referenced it in the book, I can't think of it off the top of my head, but there was a Medal of Honor recipient who he basically jumped into a Humvee. There was a Humvee attack, and he jumped on a grenade and saved a bunch of people in the Humvee from the grenade attack. And you know, he got the Medal of Honor, and obviously was a hero. I so forget his name right now. It's mentioned in the book, but I thought about what happens if he went the other way, and so that's kind of the conflict of the book. This guy sort of has the opportunity to be a hero and do that, but he does the opposite, and but he still comes back. And he does get wounded in the attack, and so everyone kind of views with the, that he's this hero, but like inside he's living with this guilt that he could have done more, and then he hears like all these stories about like people like being hero, and he thinks like I could have done more, and so that's like the driving conflict for him, but he ends up linking up with a girl that he meets, and in a sense like. She's down on her luck. She's going through some hard times herself, and he kind of sees, this is his opportunity, to be a savior, to kind of right the wrongs that he feels he committed over there. And so, it also ties in with the Christianity thing, how Jesus is our savior, and there's an innate ability in us, because we're made in the image of God. We want to be, the savior and the heroes. I mean, everyone dreams of being the hero, and, slaying the dragon and stuff like that. And so he sees his, this is his second chance to do the right thing to save somebody. And so he kind of works with this person. He tries to, save them and all. And, in the end, though, he kind of realizes that, it's kind of like with Jesus and the rich man, it's up to an individual to accept it. He just gave him the tools, told him who he was, and said, but you're going to have to, give your riches and follow me. And he couldn't do that. And so he comes to realize, the main character, that, you could help somebody along the way and you could be something good for them, but, they're going to have to take the step eventually. And so that's where I guess the title comes from the biblical quote, do not cast your pearls before swine. And it's like he's in a sense casting his pearls before this person who he's trying to save, but then it's up to them to save themselves. And if they don't, then he's just kind of not necessarily wasting his time, but he's maybe putting the effort into something that he shouldn't.
Interesting. Is this something that you had to outline, or is this, or are you more of an organic writer? You're somewhere in between. How's it? You decided to roll with this.
I'm somewhat more in between, but probably heavier leaning toward outlining. I'm probably 65% outline, 35% kind of free flow. I think if you're too rigid and just go entirely by an outline, you limit yourself, and you never know, because they always say, I guess it's kind of cliche, people are just like, oh, your characters do take over, and they actually do, because so I do a basic outline, A through, Z. But I let them choose, sometimes maybe I might have to skip D based on where the characters want to go. But I do tend to have an outline. But some things may get added, some things may get dropped in the outline. So I'm not married to the outline, but I do definitely approach things with an outline in mind.
Nice. Now, I don't want to get you on a show with a seat of the pants person or anybody like that. I don't want an argument to ensue. Everybody seems to be different that comes on the show. I'm very thankful for that. I mean, some people are just, they say, there's a beginning and an end, and they just go. So it's pretty cool. Where can people find you on social media?
I am on Facebook. You can just look up Kevin Stabinski on Facebook. I can actually pull up a link there. I'm also do a Twitter. Kevin Stabinski is the same name there. I have a blog as well. I will read off the name of that. It's http://kstabinski, STABINSKY, blogspot.com. You'll notice on that I do have my my social media there on the right-hand column in the links. If you need me to repeat that, it's kstabinski, STABINSKY.blogspot.com. That's my main blog. I tend to do blogging the most, and from there you can find my links. Feel free to follow me on Twitter, anyone, and shoot a friend request on Facebook. I also put out stuff on that as well. So those are my big ones right now. I wasn't really much of a social media person until I got involved with Helping Hands Press. So, it's still growing. I'm sure there are more things that will pop up eventually. I do have a Goodreads and a Google Plus account. Don't use them too much because I'm still learning. But, so the main one right now is my my blog, my Facebook, and then the Twitter. So.
Cool. What do you do to chill out? What do you do to relax?
Mainly just I work out. I run. Wish I was a little better at it, but, work out, do yoga. I just started getting into that. I had a little bit of a compressed disc in my neck from carrying around body armor and helmet over there while deployed. And the VA told me to start doing yoga. So I got really involved in yoga, found yoga for regular guys. I know I'm plugging something there, but worked really good for me. I enjoy doing that. And, just relaxing with my dog. I got a little chihuahua who's very, very hyper and high maintenance, but he's like my kid, so love him.
Yeah, people across the street have a chihuahua. It looks like it's on crack all the time. Just won't stop. It's shaking all the time, big eyes, just barking all the time. I just look at him
that's how our guy is, but
you're the size of my foot,
Yeah, mm-hmm.
I don't get the chihuahuas.
There's something you... Some people love them, some people don't. I guess, different strokes for different folks. I don't think I would have really liked them, but because they have that reputation. But my friend has one, and he is like the most well-behaved chihuahua ever. Like, he doesn't bark, he doesn't growl. He's very low maintenance. He's just like...
Really?
Yes. If everybody had that Charlie, they would be like, chihuahuas are the best dogs ever, because he really is.
Mine, an anomaly, though. How did he find a chihuahua like that? He just trained it that way?
A little bit of training, yeah. Yeah, mainly. I'll give props out to Lisa, his owner. She really trains him, works really good with him. Really funny, kind of off story about him, though, and how well he was trained. He actually got a Canine Good Citizen Medal, which is like the first step if you wanted to be a working dog or a therapy dog. And it was really funny because he's getting tested with all these big dogs, like Labs and Malamutes and stuff like that. They have these big 70-pound, 100-pound dogs, and then he's this little 7-pound chihuahua. It was really funny too, but he's well trained and he passed it all. So yeah, definitely an anomaly. But if everyone saw him, they would want chihuahua. So. But if there's anyone out there looking for a dog, I encourage you to adopt. So that's how I got my guy, Spartacus, from adoption. And,
I'm sorry. When you do the yoga, does that clear your mind? Do you come up with story ideas while you're doing that?
No, mainly because I'm usually grunting and groaning in pain from the stretchy positions that I'm being put in. So that's one of the good things about yoga is you can always push yourself. You can always go a little harder, a little bit easier, and there's always room to improve in it. So even though I've been doing it for a little over a year, workout still hurt because you can always stretch more. And as soon as you get to that one point, you're like, yes, I stretched a little bit more. You realize, wait, I can still go a little further. So, no, mainly most of my energy in that is just thinking of.
I've had a few yoga people here on the show. Very interesting stuff.
Yeah. Well, in terms of where I get my ideas, I think a lot of times it's just, you know, walking the dog. I spend hours a day walking him because he has to get out at least 3 or 4 times a day. You know, just go to the bathroom and stuff like that. You know, and dogs, that's what they do. Dogs walk. So I'm out there a lot with him. And you got to have something to clear your mind. You know, he's busy sniffing and you got to do things. And I heard, I forget who said it one time, but somebody once said that, you know, all great thoughts are conceived while walking. So I guess I come up with a lot of stuff while walking.
Nice.
So.
Very nice. What other genres do you enjoy? Do you see yourself just staying in one genre, or do you like to dabble in other genres?
I like to dabble. I think growing up, I mean, I really liked science fiction. That was probably my favorite genre. My cousin Mark got me into reading when I was in 9th grade with the Star Wars novels. I was always a big Star Wars fan. And then around that time, when I was in, well, a little before I was in 7th grade, Timothy Zahn came out with his Heir to the Empire trilogy, and my cousin got me into that, and I just really started devouring reading. And I like sci-fi, fantasy, a little bit of supernatural type stuff. I think big influence, though, in college, we did a lot of, contemporary type fiction. And so that's why I think I went with a contemporary type fiction. Plus, you know, I just got back from Iraq, too, and they always say, write about what you know. So that was the biggest thing on my mind at the time. So I do see myself eventually, you know, getting off into other things. I have been working on a second novel that's pretty much done. I'm just, re-editing it, changing it out. I think some of the characters were a little weak, and I'm trying to strengthen them up a little bit. But that's more of a Indiana Jones type thing that deals more with, kind of the adventure type fantasy. Ties in with kind of the Ark of the Covenant, Indiana Jones type thing. So
nice.
Definitely, like, eventually see myself, going out there and trying and see what I like best and seeing what, hopefully readers respond best to, and just because it's about, in a sense, it's about, pleasing them as well, and getting them to enjoy your stuff, so.
Pretty cool. What kind of stuff do you read for fun?
Like I said, mainly a lot of sci-fi. I've read a lot of Star Wars, except for once they started coming out way too quickly. I think I got past the New Jedi Order, and then books started just coming out way too quickly. I just couldn't keep up with them anymore. Just the standard, fiction. I was big into Tolkien, Robert Jordan, the Wheel of Time series. I write Christian, obviously. So some of the folks I like with that, I like Bill Myers. He does an interesting job of supernatural and with a biblical type basis. Cat biblical type stuff. Enjoy. He's a lesser known guy, L.A. Marzulli. He kind of writes about kind of ancient aliens and the Bible, and his big thing is in the Genesis, the account of the Nephilim, and he has some interesting science fiction type stuff with angels and fallen angels on Earth and interacting with humans. He's a lesser known guy, but I find his work pretty interesting as well, L.A. Marzulli. And then just the normal newspaper I enjoy. I still read newspapers. I think there's a soft spot in my heart for that because that's what I first started writing with, whether it was interning or corresponding while I was in college in the newspaper. business, and then in the Army newspaper, writing for them every week. I still have a soft spot in them for, you know, newspapers, which sometimes, like I said, can give you good ideas as well in terms of what you want to write about. There's always interesting stories out there, so just a matter of, you know, making them find a new angle for them.
Yeah, what's it like to see your work, like, actually in a newspaper, somebody reading it, you know, your peers? Does that give you a lot of juice, or did you just get used to it after a while?
I think you get used to it after a while, you know, but it's still always good to, you know, when people do come up to you, you sort of get used to it, but it still always feels good when somebody comes up to you and says, you know, like, oh, I saw this, or I like the new angle that you took on it. I think that's where, like, the more hype that kept you going was when somebody would come and say, like, you know, like, wow, like, you really took a new angle on that story, or, you know, I've never seen you cover something like that or in that way before. So I think that prompts you also to, you know, expand yourself as a writer, you know, to kind of seek that new praise out. Be like, you know, how can I write this other than a way that's been written before? So.
Yeah, I think that's got to be a challenge.
Yeah, especially because, you know, in the Army, there's always a lot of things that are going on that are, like, obviously every year, you know, the Army birthday is going to be up in June, so you're going to have to write a story on that. There's always going to be change of commands where a new commander comes in, takes over. There's always going to be stories of, you know, soldiers returning from deployment, training exercises. So it's a matter of, you know, especially, you know, when you realize that most of your audience is military, so they've probably seen these stories themselves in the Antarctic. And I always wanted to, you know, I think the worst thing to do is to write something and have no one want to read it. That was my thing. I always try to find it, try to make it something enjoyable and readable.
Nice. This is the first time you were on the show, but I always ask everybody the same question before we leave. Is there a question that I haven't asked you today you're hoping I would, or is there one that someone hasn't asked you, whether it's in your interviewing travels or things like that, someone hasn't asked you you've always hoped they would?
No, not really. I think we pretty much covered most of the bases. It's really weird because usually when I interview people for a story, that's the last thing I ask everyone, too. So you think that I have something better planned. But, no, I think that we pretty much covered everything. I'm looking forward to continuing the relationship with Helping Hands Press. They've been everybody I've worked with that company right now has been very excellent. Really taught me a lot. It's a lot more. People just think, oh, I'm going to write a book and that's going to be it, you know, and there's a lot that goes behind it, and I'm really thankful for these people giving me the opportunity to, you know, put my work out there, and I look forward to continuing the relationship in the future, and look forward to being on the show again, and listening to people's comments and feedback, and I guess I'll close it out by just giving that blog again, because that's the main one that I think a lot of people will go to and get my stuff. It's kevinstabinski.blogspot.com, and looking forward to everyone's feedback, and I want to just take this time to thank everyone who is listening in or who will listen in on the future to this radio, because I know they kind of put it online, so just once again, thanks for the opportunity and looking forward to doing this again.
Thank you so much, everybody. Kevin L. Stabinski. His soon-to-be-released story is Pearls Before Swine. If you go on the Helping Hands Press blog, you can see the two covers for folks to pick. Please add your comments in there and take a stab at helping Kevin decide which cover to use. What I'm going to do is, before we leave today, because we got a little bit of time, I'm going to play the audio sample for Murray Pure's Silver City as narrated by George Taylor. Everybody have a great day. We're on tomorrow at 10 a.m. with Kim Vogel Sawyer and at 10:30 with Anita Higman. Have a great night, everybody. Bye-bye.
Helping Hands Press and Narration by George present Volume 1 of Murray Pura's Silver City, This Is Where the Cowboy Rides Away. Graydon St. Cyr expected difficult assignments when he left the U.S. Marshals Service to go freelance. He expected to be sent after fugitives no other agency wanted to touch. What he didn't expect was to be sent after the man who had saved his life. And he didn't expect that high-ups not only wanted the fugitive dead, they wanted Graydon St. Cyr dead, too. Listen to this sample, read by narrator George Taylor. Billy Ice Cream Scafidi drove up to the Canada-U.S. border crossing with a smile. No one could possibly know who he was. Everything about his physical appearance had been altered, and his fake ID and fake internet hits had been impeccably rendered. Nothing was going to happen between him and the Canadian border guards, and nothing did. He was asked a few standard questions. His ID and passport and Nevada license plate checked against the online database, and he was whisked through. Behind him, a pickup truck of teenagers was ordered to pull over. He grinned, checked his GPS, and made his way through southwestern Alberta, through the Rockies on Highway 3, and once he was in B.C., he used back roads to wind his way north and east. He used a motel three times over the next few days. The mountains got taller and the fall air colder. Finally, he parked at a trailhead, threw a small pack over his shoulder, and walked in for a mile through the bush, until a small, rough-hewn log cabin came into view. The bark hadn't been peeled off any of the logs. "Home, sweet home," he grinned. "Thank you, Jesus." He spent a few minutes looking for signs of life. He even sniffed the air. Then he stepped onto a porch of splintering planks and pulled open the wooden door. A man, wearing a cowboy hat and brown leather coat, was sitting at a table in the middle of the cabin. "Howdy, Billy," he said. "Graydon St. Cyr," Billy froze. "You can't be that good." "Well, now, it's a funny thing, Billy. A murderer can lay low for 2 years, get his fingerprints removed. He can get a plastic surgeon to remake his face, grow a beard and make his hair another color completely. Heck, he can even have eye transplants, if he's got the money. Yes, sir, he can come out with an absolutely new identity. But you know, some things you have to work on just a bit harder. The cars you like to drive, the brands of clothes you like to wear, how much you tip a pretty waitress, your gait when you walk, how you laugh, how you sneeze, how you pick out gristle from between your teeth after a meal, even if you paid for a new set of teeth on top of it all. I must have looked at 1,000 miles of tape from surveillance cameras in stores, at gas stations, in restaurants, at border crossings, airports, Greyhound depots, you name it, and one hunch would lead to another hunch, one break to another break, a lucky guess to another lucky guess, and here we are, together again. Graydon nodded with his head. Your right shoulder droops as if you're carrying a heavy pack, which you aren't. I guess you've had that condition since you were in high school. Billy dropped his small pack on the floor. So, what now? A long hike back to the trailhead? A really long drive back to the Canada-U.S. border? Billy, Graydon put his SIG pistol on the table. I'm not bringing you in. What are you talking about? I mean, I'm doing you a favor. No jail time, no prison gangs, no watching your back for a shiv carved from a toothbrush. Billy hesitated. You're going to kill me. Or you're going to kill me. Graydon tugged a Glock out of his coat pocket and tossed it to Billy. I'm just tired of chasing you. And I know you won't serve more than a few years, what with your gangsta lawyers and all. Billy held the Glock in both hands, with its barrel pointing down. He checked to make sure it was loaded. Why don't they send a U.S. Marshal after me? Because we figured you'd cross the northern border. So, what's wrong with the Mounties? They're too nice. Too nice? Hell, even Raylan Givens is nicer than you. Yes, sir. Nicer, but not faster. Graydon took off his hat and set it crown down on the table. The other thing is, he's an actor, and he's TV. I'm not. His blue eyes stayed locked on Billy's. If anything, I'm your reality show. You like The Hunt, don't you?
I do.
Let me run. Give me a 5-minute lead and let me run. Make it fair. Graydon snorted.
Billy, I've already tracked you through 10 states and 2 provinces. You've had your run, and I've had my hunt. Now, it's time for the kill.
That's Murray Pura's Silver City, Volume 1. This is Where the Cowboy Rides Away. Now an audiobook from Helping Hands Press and narration by George.com.